But we do have a quorum, so if you want to go ahead and kick off the meeting, we are good to start.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. We have first on our next item on our agenda is the consent agenda. So item one, approval of minutes, meeting minutes from December 14th, 2020. Do I hear a motion on that?
This is Matt, so moved.
Okay, got a, do we need a second, Art, on this group?
Yeah, we do. And Mr. Chairman, if you want, we can take the consent agenda as it.
I apologize. I didn't realize that I should have read consent agenda instead of jumping down to the items, right? So we have our consent agenda, so let's back up. We have our consent agenda, which is the minutes from December 14th, the minutes from January 25th, the January 2021 budget to actual report, and the January 31st, 2021 financials. I'll take a motion on all four of those as the consent agenda.
Is Matt still moved?
I'll second.
Thank you. All in favor? Or do we need a roll call?
Aye.
Monica, second. Yeah, let me do a roll call, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind.
Yep, go ahead.
So we have Jeff.
Aye.
Anna.
Yes.
Matt.
Yes.
Monica.
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Perfect. Okay, next is the administrative discussion. So I'll turn that over to Art for the 2021 rate discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 2022. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm glad we could get together today, and I apologize for on behalf of Teams for the last time we tried to get together and do this. I know that we have an hour. We're scheduled for an hour, and some of us have a hard stop at 4. So I don't want to take up too much of Mike's time, but there are a couple of things that I did want to go over with respect to the 2022 rate setting process, and really we'll back up, because this will be a central role for this board moving forward, is to look at our rate structure and make recommendations to mayor and council with respect to the adoption of the rate structure. And so that was the intent back when we had this meeting on May 15. I was really looking for the board at that time to provide some feedback and really a motion to mayor and council and the city manager's office on the rate structure at that time. Obviously, things have changed between that time and now. You know, it's a month has passed, and so there's a new information available, and we couldn't wait on the rescheduling of this meeting in order to take our information to the city manager's office as he's preparing his city manager's recommended budget. But I do want to make sure that you understand that you're a very integral piece in the rate setting process as far as reviewing them and making recommendations to mayor and council moving forward as we begin to really establish this board moving forward. And so what I'd like to call your attention to is Mike will go through the presentation that I sent out yesterday and then again in early March. But I want to call your attention to the rate projection slide or the page that I sent out yesterday. And before we really, let me share my screen in case not everybody has it available. Can everybody see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So before we really get into the numbers, I wanted to take an opportunity to say here that the rate as projected on this page is 2.9% increase from our 2021 rates. And this is after, okay, this is after we had negotiated thoroughly and fully the results of the RFP. So the original presentation included a different number, and a couple things changed between that time in May or in March and today's numbers, which is 2.9. This is the number that we went to the city manager's office with for approval. And what we sought was the approval to hold employee rates flat for the 2022 fiscal year at this 2.9%. So the employer would absorb the full 2.9%, which equates to a $1.8 million difference between the 2021 rates and the 2022 rates. And the reason for that is the city is looking at, with respect to our compensation plan, the city is looking at our market surveys and possibly having some increases as a result of that survey. And then for those that don't get a market survey, they'll get a 2% COLA, I guess, if you will. And so the optics of providing a cost of living adjustment or a pay increase and then a cost share on the medical side with respect to premiums would probably not be very favorable in the eyes of employees. And so we decided to go ahead and to recommend that the city manager recommend to mayor and council that the rate as presented here be absorbed fully by the city. It's my understanding, and Jeff can talk to this as he can, that will be the recommendation to mayor and council when Mike presents his city manager's recommended budget on May 4th. So wanted to make sure that that is fully understood from the committee moving forward. And that is really where we were looking at going through, taking a close look at the numbers and then having the committee make a recommendation to mayor and council based upon on the numbers in the presentation. At the time, we also could not share the results of the RFP. And I think we're still in our 10-day waiting period, if I'm not mistaken. But these numbers do include further negotiations with the vendor that we were able to negotiate. And I should also point out that this 2.9% number, I do expect it to come down a little bit because we're going to go out for RFP. We're actually out for RFP on aggregate and specific stop loss. And so we should see some savings to the stop loss premiums that are mentioned here on line 15 and line 16. And so those are conservative numbers. I don't expect them to come down dramatically, but we should see some small savings. I also want to call out line 26, which is other city expenses. That $1,053,000 really represents the city's overhead in terms of our cost of doing business, our staff salaries, employee related expenditures, payment for auditing and legal services, miscellaneous professional services, you know, the day-to-day operations of the benefits staff, the benefits office. I have requested through the 2022 supplemental budget process an additional staff person and a half to be funded out of the self-insurance trust fund. And so if approved, this number would go up a little bit. We also, at this point, don't know what the mayor and council will move forward with the market study increases and the COLAs. So that's still an outstanding item that will impact that line 26 item. But I don't expect it to move the needle in such a way that it would create a marginal difference in the numbers. So with that said, I'm going to pause there, ask if there's any questions before I turn it back over to Mike, and he'll walk you through the assumptions that were used, the time period. We did use a different time period than we're accustomed to, and that's a direct impact from COVID. I also want to call your attention to line 13 of the document, which is the claim fluctuation margin at 2%. That's a conversation that we had between Mike McDeesey and Amy Girard over at Siegel. And really what that represents is a phased reopening of normalcy, I guess is what I'll call it, where we'll start to see employees and their families go back in for things that they may have put off during the pandemic, not wanting to go to the doctor, elective surgeries, elective procedures, things of that nature, and just the regular normal day-to-day, what I would call day-to-day visits to their, you know, well visits or standard visits to their doctor. And we included that as a sort of a contingency, if you will, for claim fluctuation for 2022. So that being said, I'll pause there, turn it back over to Mike, and he'll walk you through the presentation if there's no questions. Mike, I don't see any, so.
Okay. Which one are we going to start with here, Art?
Why don't you start with the full presentation? And I can pull it up as well.
Yeah, that would be helpful if you could do that.
Not a problem.
Okay, we can move through some of these pretty quickly. What we tried to do was to give you a little bit of a flavor of how the plan's actually running. So the first set of figures, do you think we can make that bigger, Art?
Yeah, I'll take my cues from you.
Well, it's small for me. I don't know if it's small for everybody else, but...
Yeah, it's kind of small. If you could make it bigger. This is Anna. If you could make it bigger.
Okay, so we started out by just giving a little bit of a snippet of, you know, starting with in the left-hand corner in the first set of boxes up there is just the financials. And then we walked through a number of different metrics on here to kind of give a snapshot of what's going on with the plan as far as looking at financials and looking at utilization and some of the other metrics. So in the upper left-hand corner is just the financials. And so on here, this is a little bit outdated. You can see some of this data is back through December back when we first put this together. I mean, now we have data through March. But you can get a pretty good flavor of the things we try to capture here. So the contributions really are what the city contributes into the trust, and then what employees have come out of payroll deductions. So if we focus kind of on that middle column in there, which is plan year to date through December of 20. So this is July. The plan year starts July 1 of each year. And you can see that we've already got about $32 million of contributions. And then below that, we've spiked out a couple different claim details. So we have medical claims of $22.5 million. These are paid claims, by the way. This is not really what I would call the ultimate liability of the plan, but it's just as claims are presented for payment. And then below that, we have pharmacy claims, which are almost about $7 million. And then the city has I'm going to use the word reinsurance. It's not really the right word to use, but I'll use it as a kind of a replacement term here. But claims that are over $325,000 for each individual that is a high claimant, Cigna will reimburse the city for that. So the city pays insurance premiums for that protection. And in exchange, anything over $325,000 on any individual covered on the plan and in the plan year, this is an incurred contract, the city will get refunds back. And you can see we've already got in that, you know, 6-month window in there, about $1 million worth of claims already that have been refunded back. So that'll give you a little bit of clue of, you know, there are certainly a number of large claimants that drive a fair amount of the cost of the plan. And then down below that, we have pharmacy rebates. So the arrangement with Cigna today has a sharing of rebates. And year to date, that's about $2 million. That of course has been improved upon, that arrangement with Cigna. So when when the next plan year starts, those rebates will be at a much higher level. But you can see if we keep going down, we get ultimately to the point where we get the totals of claims and expenses. So that's roughly about $29 million for that 6-month period. And that gives a surplus. So if we subtract the contributions subtract the claims and expenses from the contributions, that gives us about $3.4 million of surplus. And then down below that, we just look at a couple different things. We look at the loss ratio. So anything that is below 100% means that costs are at a level less than the contributions coming into the plan. So you can see here that that's been very favorable in that 6-month period. Now, again, a lot of this is driven by the fact that a lot of people either delayed or canceled care with their providers. And so, of course, you know, everybody's still getting a payroll deduction and the city's still putting in their contributions. It's just claims aren't coming through at that level. You know, that's to be expected. But at some point, people will feel free to go back out and they'll start doing their elective care again. And we already know that providers are pushing pretty hard back on the major networks to get pretty sizable increases in their contracted terms. So we know a lot of things are happening that are going to change cost, you know, down the road. So while it looks really good here, that's not necessarily exactly how the future will look. And then down below that, we just look at the PEPM. So that's per employee per month. So this kind of normalizes things by taking a look at, if we look at the prior period and the current period, we get a little bit of a flavor of how much costs are changing on a more of a normalized basis. So we have the prior period, that's through December of 19. The plan started going self-funded in July. So these are what we would call immature claim data. You would expect it to be favorable there. And as part of that, that's where we actually build up part of the reserves to cover future liabilities that are incurred in the plan year and then paid in subsequent periods. And we can talk about that in some greater detail. I think we've got kind of limited time here right now. And then below that, we have different other metrics. So just, you know, getting a flavor for the enrollment, there's roughly about, 4,700 employees. We call them subscribers. Subscribers are really employees and retirees. And below that, we have members. So these are, think of those as belly buttons. We have 11,200 members covered on the plan. And then about half the group roughly is female. And probably the only other things I'd really look at are kind of more on the right-hand side. And these aren't obviously the greatest of comparisons because we have, 6-month periods. One's a mature period, the other's an immature period. The mature period is ultra affected a lot by it's affected a lot by the COVID. Actually, I take that back. It's a 12-month period, so we backed up some into the Cigna insured contract. So this gives a little bit of a better idea, but it's still the most current period is one that is going to be understated as far as if we didn't have a pandemic impacting the figures. But the first part on here, we just look at inpatient costs because that typically is one of the major drivers for plans. And we look at a couple different statistics on here. We see how many admits per 1,000 members covered on the plan. And you can see that's been down. The average length of stay, so how long somebody's average hospital stay is, it's 4.2 days. That's down quite a bit. And then what the plan has paid in terms of claim dollars for inpatient stay is down about 5%. And then one of the other really large kind of drivers of care are these large claimants. And so you can see we've got 2 years of results. It's pretty close. You know, 68 claimants have exceeded $100,000 in the current period, that current 12-month period compared to the prior. The average cost per claim has stayed relatively flat, I would say. I mean, it's 7% difference, but in dollar terms, it's pretty close. And you can see that there's roughly about $14.8 million of claims associated with these individuals. And so when we take a look at that as a percentage of, and these are allowed charges, by the way, these aren't paid claims, but are allowed charges. So allowed charges are simply before the members' cost share. And you can see that 68 claimants generate roughly almost about a quarter of the claim volume that happens on the plan. So, and that's not atypical, by the way. That's not unusual at all. But you understand that, you know, there are going to be these high cost claimants that drive a majority of the plan's cost. Now, at over $325,000 for an individual, those claim dollars are ceded off to Cigna through the stop loss contract. Down below that, we have the discounts and you know, looking at the network usage, because obviously every time somebody goes in network, we're basically paying, the plan's paying wholesale instead of retail. Retail if you go out of network. And it's high. It's 99.6 or 8%, whichever one of those two metrics you're looking at there. And a majority of that is simply driven by the fact that you have basically an HMO type plan that is an in-network only plan. So there's no out-of-network benefit unless it's an emergency care. And a fair amount of the population's in that particular plan. So we would expect it to be high. And then the discounts on here at, 65-66% is good. It's, when we did the RFP analysis, we know it was not the best, but it wasn't the worst either. And then when we come down to the pharmacy spend, you can see that these results looking period over period are really pretty flat. Generic have gone down quite a bit. Some of the other categories of drugs have gone up, but in total, it's been pretty flat dollar-wise. And then if we go down to the, looking at the pharmacy retail versus mail order, probably the only thing I'd point out here is just the number of scripts. And again, we try to look at these on a per PMPY, per member per year. And that's roughly about 10 scripts. And, that's pretty middle of the pack. We see some of low is about 9 scripts, some others as high as, maybe 11 or 12 scripts. Mail order, which has a fill rate on here of 5.6%. And we just track that because the plan gets better discounts and the members get better deals if they use mail order. And we try to see if that's, going up or down to any degree, or if it's pretty low, then, maybe a communication release might need to be sent out to employees to encourage them to maybe relook at using mail order as an option. And then the last thing on here, we just look at the generic dispensing rate, which is 92%. That's actually really good. Most plans are, I'm going to say, between 85 and 90. And then we look at the different categories of how much per script on average is the cost to the plan. And you can see generics are roughly about $17. But then when you start getting into brand preferred drugs, that's $850. And then brand non-preferred drugs, which have, the highest copay for members too, is, just way out there, $2,700. Okay, let's move on, Art.
Mike, I had two questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
On the large medical claims, what's the methodology for determining the ISL attachment point? Because I look at, you've got an average cost per claim but of 217, but of course if these are, if that average is gross rather than, you know, the net with the stop loss, I mean, are we talking like six claimants that are $1 million and the rest, you know, where how are we setting that level?
I mean, when we first went self-funded with this, we looked at a couple, at 325 was what was in place with Cigna when it was an insured contract. We carried that over, but I think we did look at some different options. And typically, Matt, what we try to do is kind of find that break even of, you know, when do they give you enough of a break on the premium that you look at what's that difference that I pick up in, you know, presumably higher liability by going to higher levels. And I think we just determined that 325 was probably the best out of what Cigna was offering at the time. Now, we know in this stop loss RFP that's on the street now that we've also asked for some higher attachment levels to evaluate. And we'll see what the market tells us. Just because it wasn't really favorable with what Cigna was proposing doesn't necessarily mean that's what the market would represent for that either.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I don't know if this report probably didn't include, I think it doesn't include any large claims. I think we tried to de-identify some of this, but we actually provide a report to the city that actually details out, you know, so we can see how many of these claimants are over 100,000 and basically look at it by how much is the largest one versus, you know, obviously the lowest one on there is going to be at 100. But we do have some pretty sizable ones. I can just tell you that.
Okay. And then on the pharmacy ingredient cost, what are we, because I see that you're benchmarking essentially Cigna insured to Cigna PBM pricing. Do we have anything that from a benchmarking perspective that would tie to something like NADAC or something like that? Or is it all just contract to contract when you guys are evaluating?
Yeah, well, I mean, we actually looked at what the market proposed. So basically it's think of it in terms, this is probably not the right way to describe it, but it's like looking at a repricing. So vendors have provided the actual drugs that are being utilized and we ask them for terms that they get back. And then we're able to evaluate each one of those. We look at multiple different buckets, but and you would know this. I mean, we look at the actual discounts and we look at the dispensing fees and we look at the rebates. So we're taking all three of these different things into consideration to evaluate what we think is the net cost to the plan. And so yeah, we're looking at it from purely that basis of what were the different bidders proposing. And you know, we were able to go, I mean, the committee wasn't purely just focused on price. And I don't know if Art, you want to talk about maybe what the criteria was, but, you know, price was not the highest consideration by any stretch. You know, so there were a lot of other things that the city considered to be more important to the membership on the plan. And cost, I think, was kind of more of a middle of the pack item.
Okay. And I don't want to drag it too far afield. So Art, I know that we're kind of more focused on the financial side. So if I'm treading outside of the scope, just let me know.
I just want to make sure that, you know, we're 30 minutes in. I want to make sure that we get to the assumptions that were used, the data set that were used. And I do plan on bringing back sort of a high level RFP update at our next meeting so that the committee knows the outcome of the RFP. It'll, you know, I can probably tell you now, but I'll probably get slapped on the wrist from procurement if I did that, and I don't want to do that. So I do plan on bringing back that what the results of the RFP at our June meeting. So I want to make sure we focus on the assumptions here. the data that was used to derive the rates and really focus on that from the committee's perspective today.
Sounds good. Thanks. Appreciate you guys indulging.
Okay, let's go on to the next slide.
Where do you want to go, Mike? Page four?
We'll just do the summary on here. So a lot of this is just the same material, but just greater detail with what was on that dashboard. So that upper left-hand corner box, we're talking about the financials, but this actually drills it into month. And you can see we give as many buckets as we can on here with respect to the different cost figures that come through. And so if we just look on the very far left on there, I mean, this again is the number of employees and retirees and the members. And you can see that does change over time. And if you actually look down, looking at the members down in the kind of teal shaded total, you can see that the plan has actually lost a number of members over time. And a lot of that as retirees have come off the plan, actually. And so early retirees are given the option to enroll in this plan, and a fair amount do. But as membership has kind of gone down over time, looking at these two periods, and I think retirees alone were down roughly about 8%, if I remember right. That actually has a pretty favorable impact on costs, because older individuals tend to have higher medical costs. But you can see we track the contributions. So again, this is what the city pays and what employees pay. We look at a couple different categories of claim costs. So FFS is just abbreviation for fee for service. So these are claims that have some kind of arrangement where they're paid on a as-used basis, as opposed to capitation, which is a pretty high bucket of costs for Cigna. But capitation generally is fixed fees that are paid to providers, and they're not all utilization-based. Most of them are not utilization-based. And it's pretty high. This is one of the plans, I think, as participants would know on here, is that the network plan is a PCP-driven plan. And so a large part of that capitation goes to pay primary care providers. And then again, we have the stop-loss refunds by month on there. And then, you know, we mentioned on the other slide about the pharmacy rebates being $2 million. We got that in December. And then the plan expenses and the total cost. And then that's where we come up to roughly about $3.3 million of surplus for that period, and roughly about a 90% loss ratio on there. When we compare it back to the 1920 period, so these are, again, just 6 months over 6 months. So it's really hard to compare that, because there's definitely a lot of noise in the numbers trying to do that. Okay, Art, next slide. These next ones really kind of go more into, breaking costs out between actives and retirees. And you'll see just a totally different story when you look through this. And if you just look at the total numbers and go all the way to the far right, where we talk about whether there's an excess or there's a loss. So looking at all the expenses less the contributions, you can see in this particular slide, there's roughly about $5.3 million of surplus, and the plan's running at roughly about an 80% loss ratio. So keep that number in mind, because then when you go to the next slide and you look at retirees, it's really kind of a quite different story. And over here, you can see that it's really the exact opposite picture. If you go down to that same teal shaded total, you can see here there's roughly about a $2 million loss. and the loss ratio is about 135%. Now, you know, we should also caution in here that when the rates are set for retirees and actives, they're just blended together, the claim experience. So retirees don't have their own self-supporting rate. The rate is really kind of subsidized between actives and retirees. So the retirees pay the same premium rate that is charged on the active employees as well. You know, maybe at some point, you know, maybe this you know, board will make some determination about whether that's still appropriate or not. But that's the way things have been done for quite some time. Okay, next slide. This slide just breaks through some of the expenses as it relates really to what Cigna's charging on here. And so you can see we've got medical administration, we've got the stop loss premiums, and you can see that that is a big amount of the expense, the individual stop loss. So again, they pick up catastrophic claimant coverage over $325,000. But the city pays a premium for that that feature. And then the only other thing is just these non-claim expenses that we track. So these are expenses that Cigna passes through the city's self-funded bank account. And we've been kind of keeping those separate from the actual claims that go through, just so we're making sure that if anything large is happening there, that we identify that early on and then ask questions about that. And that doesn't include everything, by the way. I mean, I know in some revised reports, we put estimates now for the city's own cost and put kind of an average in there for each month. And we hope at some point that we'll be able to kind of sync things up and be able to get more kind of real-time costs for each month. Okay, so on the projection itself, there were a couple different things that we looked at, and I think, you know, the one thing we want to stand out here is that, you know, obviously COVID has had a really big impact on the healthcare arena, and even though you see a lot of things on TV with, you know, hospitals looking like they're filled with a bunch of COVID patients, actually hospitals really kind of suffered a lot because anything that was elective care got really canceled, and they were actually hurting for business. Not a good way to describe it, but that really is what it came down to. And so we know that when we look at the claims data, we know that we would typically use the most recent 12 months of claims to project going forward. You know, the city spends, you know, $50, $60 million a year. And so the claims history is credible enough that we can use that to project going forward. But there was so much noise in the data from COVID that we didn't think that that was going to be the best way to look at that. And we tried to put some actuarial factors in different months to adjust for that. And it was just a lot of noise. And so we made the determination that we would really look at what we call pre-COVID claim activity. So basically costs through February of 2020. And we would just not use more recent data. And we that way we would take a lot of the noise that was in those numbers just simply out of the equation. So we used the 12 months up through February. Okay, next slide, Art. And maybe it's kind of better, maybe it's better, Art, if we just put that one slide that you had back up. I can talk to most of these things, by the way. I think that, you know, these are just the details of this particular slide here. Maybe we can make that a little bit bigger. But if we look at the very first line on there, so this is where we went back and looked at costs. So we're going to call this pre-COVID costs. And we look at this by each of the different plans that are offered by the city. So there's three plans. There's a network plan, an HRA plan, and an HSA plan. And we look at the PEPM costs, incurred costs for each of those different plans and periods. And we put that on what we call per employee per month basis. So as you kind of look through there, you can already kind of tell what's my plan that costs the most, and then what's the plan that might actually cost the least. The network plan, because it has really generous benefits and it's copay based plan, obviously attracts a lot of employees to it, and typically your highest utilizers tend to go on plans that have the nicest benefits. And so when you look at that line one for the network plan, you can see it was an averaged $1,000, a little bit over $1,000 per employee per month, just looking at the claims history. And then when you go to the right, you've got the HRA plan and the HSA plan. The HRA plan is just like the HSA plan, except it's got a copay-based drug plan on it. But you can see that's double the HSA, and really part of that is, I'd say a fair amount of that is really driven by the fact that the early retirees aren't permitted really to enroll in the HSA plan. So that's one reason a lot of them end up in this HRA plan. And then the other is this network plan is only offered in the state of Arizona. So if you're a retiree outside the state, your only option is the HRA plan. And so you can see that drives a lot of the cost for that HRA plan. It's basically double the HSA plan, even though they're very close to being similar type of coverages. And then on line two, we take trends. So we take history, claim history. We take what we think are going to be trends over between really looking at the history and looking at what we expect going forward as far as what's going to happen with cost and utilization. And, you know, a lot of things drive trend. Basically, you can nail it down kind of to two things. Unit cost of what a service runs. So if your PCP today has got a deal with Cigna where he charges $100, he has a contracted rate of $100, that can be that could be $110 in the upcoming period. It's whatever he's going to negotiate with them, but it's not likely to stay flat. So part of it is unit cost. The other part of it is utilization. And so we know as population ages, people tend to use more services. And so those two things are the predominant things that drive trend. And as you can see, they're pretty high numbers when you think about, when you think about CPI or other things where we might measure inflation. Medical care is one that has been significantly higher than that. And then we take the cost and we trend it out to the projected period. So we're taking costs from February, prior to February 2020, and we're trending that all the way out to our projected period, which is July of 2021 through June of 2022. So that puts a lot of trend factor into the cost. And you can see just looking between line one and line five, that makes a pretty big difference in what we anticipate what's going to happen with cost. So it's a lot. And then on line six on here, we have, again, that capitation cost, which these are fixed fees that Cigna negotiates with some of their providers for some of their services. And again, I think as we mentioned, it's really a pretty high number for the network plan, but they capitate a lot more services under that. But you can see it's not an inexpensive amount of money that's being spent for doing that. And so on line seven, we come up with basically our expected claims per employee per month. And you can see it ranges from $1,300 on the network plan to as low as $540 on the HSA plan. And we multiply those by our projected enrollment. Again, you can see most of the people are in the network plan that participate. And we annualize that, and we come up with, in line 10 with basically our claim costs, which is roughly about, if you go to the far right there, $62 million of cost. And then on top of that, we started building in some things that we thought were potentials for the plan to pick up. Again, nobody knows if you're going to need booster shots, or at the time when we completed this, which was some time ago, we weren't even quite sure if everybody in this country was going to be able to be vaccinated before July 1. So the plan could pick up the administration costs. The vaccine itself is covered by the federal government, but the administration of the shot itself is could be a plan expense. So we built in some dollars there for that, or the fact that maybe you might need a booster shot in another 6 to 12 months. So we put some cost in for that. Line 13, we suggested putting some claim fluctuation margin at 2%. And that's simply because, again, we backed up so far in time to use kind of as our baseline. And again, with all these things happening with cost pressures and things, we thought it's probably better to err on the side of being conservative and recommending that the margin be put into the rate to cover any fluctuations with costs that our trend number doesn't capture. And line 15 on here, you can see we start from there on down, we start to really kind of break down some of the components of, we'll call it non-claim cost. And we start with the specific stop loss. You can see that's roughly about $3.1 million of costs we've put in there. You know, it was a minimal increase that we put in there. We're hoping or expecting that the market itself should be able to improve upon this. And then we've got aggregate stop loss. We got Cigna administration charges. We've got some other components in here, utilization management. So these are all the different programs that Cigna offered. We just broke those out on there just so you get a kind of flavor of some of these programs and what the fees are. And then the last item on here, just the cost containment fees, which, again, we know they're pretty high. We've had some conversations, and there may be some ability to limit some of that as part of this RFP that we've went through. And then line 25 on here has the pharmacy rebates. So we're expecting roughly about $4 million of rebates come back to the plan. And we put that into the actual rate setting. So we kind of anticipated what that might look like going forward. And then as Art had mentioned on line 26 on here, these are some of the city associated expenses with running the plan. And then line 27 is a PCORI fee. So this is part of it. This is an ACA fee that's kind of malingered around for a while, it seems, and probably won't ever go away. But it's a pretty small amount. Line 28, when we first talked with the city about going self-funded, we talked about building this contingency reserve. And we were talking about using a 1.5% factor to the point where the city could have enough of a contingency reserve where they could consider doing some things that might be more favorable to the plan overall as far as flexibility. Example might be like eliminating that aggregate stop loss, or maybe taking on a greater level of liability with specific stop loss. So just some things that at the end of the day gives the city a lot more room to wiggle with things than if they didn't have that. But it was decided this year to take it out. And that's fine. That's, you know, that was a choice that was made, but we'll hope or think maybe we'll get back on track again with that. Not sure 100% where that will go, but our 10-year study when the plan went self-funded was to include that. And then line 29, we just had some extra savings. I mean, these are last minute things as part of the best and final that we incorporated in to try to make sure we got everything to show at least what we expected as far as cost. And you can see that in that gold shaded line 30, you know, it's roughly about $66 million of cost. And we compare that back to current premiums, that's, you know, roughly about $64 million. So the plan was short, roughly about $1.8 million when you look at this analysis, and that would suggest a 2.9% increase. And then down below that, we just provide some other factors. You know, we can spend some time at some point in the future going over, you know, what an IBNR liability is. But it's basically just saying at any point when the plan decides, if it ever decides to shut off, or change funding or do whatever, there's claims that have been incurred prior to that date that get paid after that. And there has to be, since there won't be any more contributions coming into the plan, there has to be reserves set up to cover those costs. And so we identify what those figures are. And then again, looking at these contingency reserves, we kind of know, just again, based off of our kind of 10-year plan, you know, what that might specifically kind of look like. And then again, the total reserve of roughly about $19 million. Okay, I know that was a lot to go through fast, and I apologize for that. Let me just pause and ask some questions there, because I think after this, it's really just, it's just the rate exhibit, I think, that comes after this, which I don't know if, I guess we did have some other things. These all just kind of relate. Yeah, there's just the rates itself. So this just shows the current rates, and then applying that 2.9% increase. And again, as you kind of look through these rates, everything was uniformly increased at that same 2.9. So even though we know retirees are running at a worse level than the active employees, we're not saying there should maybe be a higher cost associated with their rates. So you'll notice that retirees have the same premium rate that is charged to an active employee, for example. Now, of course, the active employees on here only pay whatever the payroll deduction is. That's not the full amount. The city really picks up the majority of that cost.
That's why, and I want to interject here, because these aren't the actual, this is applying the 2.9 evenly, and the what we've recommended and what the city manager will recommend is that the 2.9 will be absorbed by the city, and so the employee actually won't see any increase in their premiums at all.
Yeah, that's right. These are just the actual total funding rates that are recommended, and then that split between their, would show, if we put it into more detail, that split in there would show that employees' payroll deductions would be identical to what it is today. So the city would pick up that increase, the full increase.
And I also wanted to take you back to this slide here, or this page, where we talked about the other contingency reserve. Some of you may be wondering why was that decision made? And I can tell you, it was the decision to remove that was made in part because of the budgetary, the way that they're funding the budget this year, and they're the use of one-time dollars. The commitment from the city's end is that they're going to true up this contingency at the end of the year. So we'll see how the plan plays out, and if there's dollars needed to build the contingency reserve as per our commitment to mayor and council when we went self-insured, the city is committed to doing that. But for the purposes of this exercise, adding that contingency reserve in would have increased the rates somewhat artificially. And so we'll evaluate that at fiscal year end, which is in a couple months, and determine, well, I guess in 2022, and determine what that amount needs to be to be able to continually and adequately fund that contingency reserve. So I wanted to make sure that I pointed that out, because that might have been a question from the committee. And Mike, I think that, unless you, I don't know what else you plan to cover,
I wanted to correct one thing. I think Amy said that those rates, that was probably pre this 2.9%. That might be the original 5% in there. So I apologize. And, you know, we tried to give you the latest and greatest, but we also resent out what was originally meant for you folks to look at, I think, a while back ago.
Right. That's a good distinction.
Yeah, so I apologize for that. We really wanted you to have this particular slide here because this incorporated everything that we knew from the RFP result. Whereas I think the original one, we kind of put placeholders for a lot of things because we didn't have anything finalized really at that point.
Are there any questions from the board on the information? I know it's a lot of information in a short amount of time. And this is, you know, our first opportunity to meet together to go through in great detail and depth on the numbers and how we arrive at the numbers. I guess we'll pause here and ask if there's any questions, given that there's 3 minutes left. And I know some of you have a hard stop at four. No questions. I don't see any hands. No questions. So what I would be looking for in the future, and you're welcome to entertain a motion now, would be a recommendation from this body to the city manager and mayor and council that we would recommend to the 2.9% and the city absorbing that rate, or alternatively, you could make whatever motion you wanted to, but that's what I would be seeking, because I think that's what's most prudent for the city and for city employees, based on what I know to be the city's budget for 2022. And I'll ask Jeff to jump in here and see if he has any questions from his business services or comments from his business services director hat. But if not, I'll be look to see what the committee wants to do here.
The only comment I have is that the way we do the true up now at the end of the year is that we ensure the fund gets all the budgeted revenue it's supposed to have, not just the participants, because the other way to do that would be to allow the vacant positions to not pay health insurance. But we recognize claims are claims based on an assumption of attrition already, because we have regular attrition. So that was one of the reasons we didn't feel like we needed to fund necessarily a continuing building that reserve, because there is some assumption built in that there will be the full funding will be there. So any of that differential in claims will be allowed to accrue to the fund balance. So with that, I'll entertain a motion for the recommendation. Or additional conversation if it's necessary.
So I move. This is Lydia. Or I guess if there are no questions, then maybe you need a second. I wasn't sure if you actually moved or if you called for a motion.
I called for the motion.
Okay.
So the motion, to be clear, the motion is to recommend a 2.9% increase absorbed by the city?
Correct.
Right.
Okay. So moved.
I second.
Art, you want to do the roll call, please?
Yeah, let me get the straight for. So I have the motion correct. Who moved?
Lydia moved. Lydia moved and Monica seconded.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Okay. Jeff?
Yes.
Anna?
Yes.
Matt?
Yes.
Lydia?
Yes.
And Monica?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Okay, the last item is future agenda items.
Mr. Chairman, I know that there has been a repeated request to have an in-depth look at our pharmacy, and my commitment to the committee was following the results of the RFP that I'd bring that back. And so I will do so, and I'll plan on doing so at our regularly scheduled June meeting. If there aren't any, it'll be regular business in June, and I might bring back potential for an investment policy statement. Just depends on how that lines up with the June meeting. They'll have a regular financial update on the status of the trust. I'll pause here and ask if there's any other specific agenda items requested by the committee.
I think the only other thing was getting an idea as to what the high cost claimants were versus the option versus what's returned from the RFP. Just so as we understand what the mechanism is for, you know, setting that ISL attachment point.
Okay, and I will have the update for the RFP as well. Okay.
All right. So with that, hearing no other business, we can be adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Take care. Have a
good week. Appreciate your flexibility.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You have a good week. Take care. Be safe.